Mr. Alexander, a 73-year-old retired cop, showed up as a new patient. The medical records he brought along listed diagnoses of high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and high cholesterol. All of them were well managed on appropriate medication. "Any problems?" I asked him. "Nope, feeling good," he replied. I asked about his medications, whether he had an adequate supply, and if he thought any of them were causing side effects. We discussed exercise, sleep, his diet, and hobbies. He was an early morning mall walker, part of an exercise group. To me, this was a good sign, physically and socially. I asked how his wife was. "She made me promise to give this to you," he said. He unfolded a piece of lined memo paper with neat cursive handwriting. On it was a list of his medications and their doses. The ones that needed refilling were starred. There was also a question about pain in his right knee and a suggestion to check his hemoglobin A1C, a test used to monitor blood sugar control in diabetics. This all seemed reasonable enough, but I wondered why, if Mr. Alexander had knee pain, he needed a note from his wife to tell me about it. "What's going on with your knee?" I asked him. "Not much. I guess sometimes it's a little stiff," he offered. I liked Mr. Alexander. He was affable and somewhat typical of my older male patients. Stoic about all things medical and unlikely to complain in response to an open-ended question. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. He benefited from a wife who took charge of his medical care. She made sure that he attended his appointments, took his medications, and followed my recommendations. Mr. Alexander was all too willing to relinquish control over his medical care this way, in my mind, to his benefit. Other patients aren't lucky enough to have a spouse take such an active interest in their health. If they are, they're often resistant to being babied. I made a mental note about Mr. Alexander, not forthcoming with medical complaints. In his chart, I documented that he'd brought a note from his wife and what the issues were that she'd hoped I would address. This was to serve as both record of the visit and to remind me about this dynamic at subsequent appointments. I saw Mr. Alexander a half dozen more times over the next 2 years. Each visit followed the pattern we had established. I'd ask him how he was. He would always answer, "Just fine." A note from Mrs. Alexander might indicate a minor complaint, but also thoroughly detailed his medications, necessary refills, and questions about routine testing for tracking his chronic conditions. I looked forward to having Mr. Alexander on my schedule. Each time he'd come, we'd have an exchange of pleasantries and then take care of business, as outlined by his wife. His visits were a model of efficiency. Mine. A doctor has a sixth sense, or should, that when things are going too smoothly, there's probably more to the story. Late last year, Mr. Alexander developed gastrointestinal bleeding. 2 separate hospitalizations were notable for A, our inability to find any lesion in his GI tract that could be the cause of his bleeding, and B, profound delirium experienced by Mr. Alexander during his inpatient stays. Mr. Alexander's hospital delirium was so bad, he couldn't even identify where he was, what ailment he was suffering from, or his own family members. Geriatricians have long realized that there's a strong correlation between this type of incident delirium and underlying dementia. Even in patients without dementia, becoming delirious in a hospitalized setting often leads to cognitive impairment, such as errors in memory, speech, judgment, or calculation, 1 year later. After his 3rd GI bleed and hospitalization, Mr. Alexander ultimately underwent surgery to remove the part of his colon most likely to have caused his bleeding. This time, with the added fog of anesthesia, he decompensated so badly he wound up in the intensive care unit for several days. It was a harrowing time for Mrs. Alexander and for their children. Fortunately, Mr. Alexander survived his operation and his ICU stay. After a long stint at rehab, he returned home and by all accounts returned to his previous level of functioning, mall walking, household chores, even driving. One major difference was that Mrs. Alexander now accompanied him to his office visits. Her lists were slightly more replete with questions given his recent near-death experience. "You know," she remarked, "he's been given a diagnosis of Alzheimer's." This news didn't totally surprise me, but it made me feel guilty. I wasn't certain why, so after the visit I reflected on it. It occurred to me that Mrs. Alexander's comment made me feel like she was criticizing me for missing the diagnosis of Alzheimer's in her husband. The truth is, I hadn't wanted to look. The red flags had been there, stereotypic visits with nary a complaint, little regard for current events, and limited memory of our previous encounters. In retrospect, I realized that Mr. Alexander was adroit at masking his dementia. He was still capable of bantering with me. Since I didn't probe very hard, I wasn't going to find out the degree of memory loss that he'd already suffered. Of course, his wife's notes should have been the biggest clue. Labeling a patient with Alzheimer's can be devastating. It's telling them that they have an incurable, progressive illness that will not only destroy their mind, in all likelihood it will ravage the lives of their caregivers as well. I hadn't wanted to open this Pandora's box for the Alexanders. In hindsight, the diagnosis would have benefited them in at least 2 ways. Most directly, knowing that Mr. Alexander had some degree of dementia would have better allowed us to predict that he would decompensate in the hospital setting. His doctors and nurses could have been alerted to be more proactive in trying to prevent his delirium. Secondly, a diagnosis of Alzheimer's would have given Mrs. Alexander more time and knowledge to care for her husband. Even when we can't really help a patient, giving that patient's family more resources and the capacity to help is what we should be aiming for. Too often, I think we shirk our duty in this regard.